This sermon is brought to you from Shiloh United Methodist Church in Billings, Montana. We are located at 1810 Shiloh Road and can be found online at billingsshiloh.church. We hope this ministry of podcasting is of value to you.
So we get to journey on this I Am statement journey, not just here at Shiloh, but also at Grace United Methodist and Evangelical, and we'll be hearing from other pastors throughout the season too, because Pastor Sarah and Pastor Wendy and I all believe that we hear God's voice through many different places. So today's scripture begins in Exodus, and we hear where God says, I am who I am. It's Exodus 3, 1 through 14. And it goes this way. Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led his flock beyond the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. And there the angel of the Lord appeared to him in the burning of a bush, except when he looked upon the bush was not consumed by the fire. Then Moses said, I must turn aside and look at this great sight and see why this bush is not burned up. And when the Lord had turned aside to see, God called out to him from the bush and said, Moses, Moses, here I am. And then he said, come no closer, remove the sandals from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground. He said further, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham and the God of Isaac and the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid. Then the Lord said, I have observed the misery of my people who are in Egypt. I have heard their cry on account of their taskmasters. Indeed, I know their sufferings, and I know that I come to deliver them from the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of the land to a good and broad land flowing with milk and honey. The country of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. The cry of Israel has come to me. I have also seen the Egyptians and how they oppress them. So come, I will send you, Pharaoh, send you to Pharaoh to bring my people out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should be going to Pharaoh, that I should be the one to bring Israelites out of Egypt? And God said, I will be with you, and this shall be the sign for you that I have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall worship God on this mountain. But God then said to Moses, if I come to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your ancestors has sent you, sent me, and they ask me, what is God's name? What shall I say to them? And God said to Moses, I am who I am. And then said further, thus you shall say to the Israelites, I am has sent me to you. This is one of those great stories that we all know in the scriptures, but there's things we miss if we go through the story too quickly. So I'm going to invite us back into that story that we just heard. I'm going to invite you to imagine that you're Moses, that you're wandering in the wilderness, taking care of your father-in-law's sheep, that as you wander along, taking care of this property of your father-in-law, that you are appreciating the wilderness around you. We in Montana know about how to appreciate God in nature. We've seen God in those beautiful vistas. We know what it's like to crest the top of a mountain and see what God has created. We even know people who will pass up church just to go see God in nature, right? Moses is walking along and he's thinking to himself, what is going on in my life? He thinks of himself right now and this by saying, I'm a criminal. I've murdered someone for being awful to my people. I've run away from my homeland. And Moses is trying to understand how to enter this new life that he has found, this new life where he is a husband and where he's taking care of sheep and he's wandering through the wilderness, thinking through who he is. And as he wanders, he sees on the hillside a burning bush. That bush is burning, and he notices that it's a little different. It's not falling apart. It's not turning black. It's not crumbling to the ground as it burns. And so he says, I think I got to check this out. And I want to say right now, most of us would probably run the other direction. So he approaches the site where the bush is, and it starts talking to him. And now is when I know the scriptures are right, because Moses gets a little bit scared. Voices coming from a new direction, asking him, who are you? And he says, I'm Moses. And God draws him to the bush and says, Moses, Moses, I've been calling you. And I have to ask in that moment, was Moses in his right mind when he hears a bush speaking to him? You know, he probably wasn't, but let's be very honest, most of us are not in our own right minds. The bush is calling to him by name. The bush is literally talking to him. United Methodist pastor Adam Hamilton, in a book called Making Sense of the Bible, says this: has God ever spoken to you? I feel like God has spoken to me on many occasions, but I've never heard an audible voice, and I tend to be leery of people who hear voices from God, though I don't doubt that God speaks in that way. Some people like Moses and Paul and Jesus had moments when they heard the audible voice of God, but even they did not hear God this way most of the time. We discussed this notion on Tuesday in our class about the I Am statements, and again, you're all welcome to continue to join us in that. And the consensus of that was that we have all heard God speak to us in some way. But like Adam Hamilton, we're nervous when people speak with grandiose claims about God giving them the exact message that needs to be heard. It seems that grandiose claims about God can claim power and can cause harm oftentimes. So we're cautious for good reason, because God's voice tends to be gentle and subtle. But I think it is clear that sometimes God breaks out of that place. We expect to hear God, and God does miraculous things. Let's get back to Moses, though. He appreciates that the burning bush is calling out to him, and it invites him to remove his shoes. And removing shoes in our culture is a sign of respect, right? We don't want to mess up the carpet, is often what you hear. And this seems like an opportunity to remind us that this is a chance where God's saying, get comfortable with me. Kick off your shoes, arrive in my living room, and get to know what I'm thinking. Here is Moses being called by name, taking off his shoes, and getting comfortable in the presence of God. So here's what I want you to do. Take off your shoes this morning if you want to. It's up to you. But if you want to get comfortable in our space today, take off your shoes and do that. And trust me, some people at the first service took me up on it, so... God wants us to come experience the presence and be comfortable in the places where God calls us. This Lenten season, this whole idea is about removing our shoes. It's about removing the parts of life that get in the way and allowing us to get comfortable with God. We do this through prayer practices that we don't normally do. We do this through fasting rituals, whether that be giving up on something or giving up on a few other things so that you can focus on prayer and what matters in connecting with God. God calls us to walk with Jesus toward the cross by getting to know God more deeply, by getting comfortable in God's living room and inviting us to be a part of the story of God. Now, here's the challenge. When you get comfortable with God, God often gets into your very being and asks you to be more a part of God's story, asks you to be a character in God's story. So here Moses stands after his experience of God's presence and settling in with God, and suddenly God starts to say, Moses, I've been struggling with how my people are being treated. I hear their cries for new life, though they know not how hard it will be to move to this new place, though they don't know exactly how to do this, and then some of them are more comfortable in slavery than they think. And Moses can be caught in this moment, shaking his head, yes, agreeing, as if he's sitting in the living room with God, just agreeing with what's happening. Yes, I know my people are trapped by a human system that causes poverty, pain, even death, and it doesn't allow God's spirit to move among the people and to live into God's kingdom. And suddenly Moses realizes, as he's nodding his head, that the ending part of that statement, God says to Moses, that means I need you to go take care of this for me. And he's shaking his head, and then he stops. And he looks around as if somebody else is in the wilderness with him and says, you mean me? I'm supposed to go make a difference? I'm supposed to go change the world? This last week, I got to have coffee with someone who is becoming a dear friend to me in ministry. He's a pastor in town, and his name is Matt. He and I get to share about life when we get together. We share about the challenges of our work, but we also share about our own personal struggles. And every time I sit with Matt, I find myself thinking, I know why God called him to be a pastor. Matt is a guitar-playing, hipster, smooth-talking pastor with a genuine heart and a grounded soul. I, on the other hand, am an overweight son of a cement plant worker who sometimes likes sci-fi over real-world stuff. As I sit listening to Matt I hear him share the challenges that he's facing right now of walking alongside a brother, a physical brother, who is dying from cancer. And I'm in awe of his integrity about how he's doing that. And then he asked me how I'm doing. And I stop and I have that feeling like I don't know exactly what to say, Matt. My life isn't as challenging as yours. But he waits patiently. And then I talk about my own struggles and I realize something. My struggles are my struggles, and his struggles are his struggles. And it's okay that we can just share in those together. As we talk, Matt and I slipped into a conversation about always feeling inadequate in this call to ministry. Matt says, it always feels like we're one step away of being found out as a fraud. He's right, isn't he? As adults, we always feel like we're one step away from being found out that we might not have the expertise we think we have, that we might not know the right answer at the right moment. It's like we're holding on to that cliff of certainty and then we're afraid that someone's going to lift that last finger and we're going to fall into a void of those people we call clueless, as if they don't know what's going on in the world. The other night, we elected our new leadership for Shiloh at a church meeting, and it was a wonderful time of talking about where we're heading and what we're doing. And I found myself feeling inadequate throughout the conversation because a lot is being asked of me as a pastor. And after the meeting, I reflected and prayed about that time, and I realized except for the one teenager who showed up faithfully, I was the youngest person in the room. There were centuries of experience in that room. No wonder I felt inadequate. And yet, all of us in that room were being called to live into the direction of our church. All of us were being called, even me, even the ones who feel inadequate. As I reflected back to my time sitting across from Matt, I realized just like my challenges are my challenges, my role and calling in each situation are what I'm called to be. See, we're all kind of Moses. We're all faced with the burning bush, and we're all caught in the wilderness with our shoes off, wondering, me? You're calling me to do this? And yet there is God saying, you are my beloved child with whom I'm well pleased. Go and serve. We as a culture got called back to a who-me situation this week. Sitting across from friends on Ash Wednesday in a coffee shop, putting ashes on people's foreheads on a TV was playing out a horrendous scene of another shooting in our country. And like the burning bush of Moses, we're faced with a problem that has no simple solution, and yet we're being called to make a difference. I find myself terrified about what to do next. Political answers abound in these moments, and yet the problem is so challenging. We have lonely, hurting perpetrators who need our help to avoid these awful events. We have weapons that are inappropriate in the hands of people who they don't need to be in. We have systems that allow people to prevent these, that don't allow the people to prevent these awful acts. And yet here we are being called to change our world, to remove death or face more of it. And I think this is another reason God has Moses take off his shoes. Because when we figure out the burning bush is talking to us, we want to run the other direction. And when you have your shoes off in the wilderness, it's a lot harder to run away. Maybe that's God's idea all along. I don't know. Moses does something I love after receiving God's call, though. It shows Moses' gumption. He knows what he's about to get into. If you're going to want me to do this, God, you need to tell me your name so that I can say to the people, I come in the name of God, the one that the God of your ancestors, the one who will save you for this day. Moses is being savvy. He knows the people will listen if he can come with God's ID. Isn't that an absurd notion to get God's ID card so that he can go up and say, God sent me? Yep, God sent me. Pharaoh, let my people go. And yet, God then says, nope, not going to give you my ID. I'm going to say this. I am who I am. I'm with you always, Moses. I will be who I will be. And for us, this means God is with us all the time. God is with us always, and to Moses, the same command. The name of God did not sway Pharaoh. In reality, it did not persuade the people of Israel to leave right away either. Exodus continues to be full of stories of Moses trying to convince the people of God that God's the one calling them to this new life. The story continues with God having to work with Moses to do crazy things to get Pharaoh's attention, dropping frogs from the sky and going so far as to kill firstborn children, which is an act I struggle with when I read the scriptures continually. Most of us don't understand what that is about. And I dare say that that's one of the pieces of the story I struggle with most. We just don't think of God as working in a way that like that. And yet God says, I will be what I will be. And the truth is that some people do believe that God is on their side, working alongside them. And at times I think we all need this, whether we're suffering or we're facing challenges or struggles, whether we're facing something that we can't handle, grief and fear. God, I need is the most powerful prayer often that we can say at those moments. And it's not a bad way to know our God, is to be a God that walks alongside of us. The people of the civil rights movement chose this Exodus passage to help them through their challenges for a reason. And the times when we imagine God coming into our life and being alongside of us when we're struggling is so powerful. And yet, when it becomes dangerous to imagine God by your side is when you lose respect for life, when you start acting like God. This has become all true in our world as we've watched anti-life and anti-love things that grow in our world. And I think one of the most clear examples is the ISIS militants in the Middle East. This group continues to act as if God has given them power to decide life and death. And so because of this, we have seen public beheadings and we've seen other awful images. However, it's in these places where God's name is being misused that God's presence seems to overcome and pop out to us. Kayla Mueller is a name you may have heard a few years ago. She was a young woman from the United States who was captured by ISIS, imprisoned, and later died. We really know very little of Kayla except what you can find online, and her stories are small, but they're enough to make you know that she was a young woman who attended high school and did quite well, who was involved in many activities, who was an avid volunteer, and that part of why she was in Syria is she wanted to help people. She says this, "I find God in the suffering eyes reflected in mine. Some people find God in the church. Some people find God in nature. Some people find God in love. I find God in suffering. I've known for some time that my life's work is using my hands and tools to relieve suffering." We believe Kayla to be dead now. We're not sure, but her family has done their best to confirm that. And in the bleakest of moments of their lives, the parents still release these personal letters from Kayla's life as a way of telling her story, as a way of making her life matter. And in those letters, she shares this about her understanding of God. "I've come to a place in my experience where in every sense of the world, I've surrendered myself to our Creator because literally there was no one else. By God, by your prayers, I have felt tenderly cradled in free fall. I have been shown in darkness light, have learned that even in prison one can be free. I am grateful. I have come to see that there is a good in every situation. Sometimes we just have to look for it. And I pray each day that if nothing else, you have felt a certain closeness, surrender to God, that you have formed a bond of love, and that you have seen support among one another." Kayla describes what our God is like. Our God does not condone needless loss of life. God does not love, but God is love beyond comprehension. We need this God, and we seek this God, and we follow this God, and this God is in these I am statements we're going to be studying during Lent. The temptation with the Exodus story is to expect God just to show up in the most ordinary or the most remarkable circumstances. But in Exodus, God is also with the people, even in the non-ordinary, or the beyond ordinary and the ordinary. God is in nature. God is all around us. God is in the people across from us who call us to be Moses, the ones who need us to step up. And God is with Kayla and her ongoing story for us. Based on what I've read of Kayla's writings, it would seem that Kayla learned how to listen to God deeply in her life. She learned to listen to that God that said, "I am who I am." So this Lenten season, I'm going to invite you to do that. Listen for God's name. Listen and try to understand who God is to you. And we're going to do that through those I am statements that give us that sense of God's character. Because by learning these characteristics of God, we get to learn how to be followers of Christ and of God. One tangible way this Sunday I'd invite you to do that is to use your own I am statements about yourself, because God is in each and every one of us. To go home and say an I am statement, because usually when we say I am statements, we say things like, I'm not good enough, or I'm not healthy enough, or I'm not wealthy enough, or I'm not good enough, or I'm not smart enough, I'm not manly enough. I'm sure the list goes on, but instead, let's call that our junk list. Let's leave that aside. Let's instead go home this Lent and practice things by saying, I am, putting something positive after that. When I shared Kayla Mueller's slots, did you catch her I am statement? I am grateful. She is saying who God is to her, in her and through her. So the invitation this season is to let go of those negatives, to get to know God, to get to be deeply grounded in God's love. And by engaging in this study, my hope is as a community, we will grow in the ways we trust God. The ways we trust God to step out and say, I am who I am, and I will be who I will be, and I will work through you even though you feel like you're about to fall off a cliff. And if nothing else this season, find time to take your shoes off with God so that you can't get away as quickly. Do it by studying or praying or by doing some Lenten practice that gets you out of your shell and looking to where God is. So may God be present to all of us this season. May God be there for us. Shalom, my friends, and amen.